You shouldn't need a game plan just to get out of the car. Joint Relief Institute can help you. Fast, non-surgical, immediate pain relief and covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Now, here is more of our conversation with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine, looking back on 3 years since the war began. And I talked to Joseph about all the problems and sort of bad blood that's been hurled back and forth lately between President Trump and President Zelensky. And I asked Joe if there is something inside of him that's thinking, you know what, we were at a stalemate for so long. At least something is happening now. There's some movement, hopefully, towards peace, however rocky it may be. And I wondered if that was how he felt.
I think I see that. I think a lot of people are struggling to see it that way. But I would say, you know, with the election of Trump, Ukrainians were not, you know, the headline said panic in Kyiv. That was inaccurate. People actually saw this as an opportunity. But everyone knew up front that with Trump, the opportunity was like a yes or a no. Not so where the frustration with the previous administration was like the gray in between that knows neither victory nor defeat. It was definitely a slow bleed. There was not a clear plan for victory from the previous administration. That's a clear, I think, consensus here. And so there was an understanding that, okay, with Trump, there's a chance to move things along. And we do see, I mean, the fact that Ukraine's back in the news even is because of, you know, the new situation in Washington. And so there is a chance if it's used well. And so I think this is... this is when Ukraine really has to make its case again. And when I realized in talking with people close to the White House is that they, you know, their objections to Ukraine are almost based on figments. So like, for example, all the money. We talked about the money so often. And like, America can't afford this because that's their impression in reading the headlines. But actually, 2023 and 2024 were the best years ever for sales of American weapons to foreign countries. Like, our defense industry is booming as a result of this. So America is not actually losing money. And once I, explain these things to people, they begin to see a different perspective. This is Russia's third annual failed winter campaign on Ukraine. We have energy and light, and Ukrainians are still in the Kursk region of Russia. So I think that is... things were looking pretty bleak up until November. Now it might look very dire in the moment. And, you know, Bob, I get such different information from people every day. I mean, I had two Americans I trust in the past week, one of whom told me, Joe, don't worry, everything's going to be great. Ukraine's got some tricks up its sleeve, suggesting maybe even there's some nuclear capabilities. And then on the other side, another smart American who I also trust and who, you know, never panics, saying, oh, Joe, you know, Washington might cut everything off in 24 hours and it's going to be pandemonium. What best I can do, these next days is share with you all these different perspectives I'm getting. And then also what I would call that sort of that steady reality people can carrying on here in Ukraine.
I know you can see the end of this one way or the other kind of in sight. In fact, you said to me before we did this that Ukraine could fall in a matter of days. So are you thinking of a life after the war now? What's your emotional state at this time?
Well, the one thing that I think is missed a lot in the current stories reporting about Ukraine, you know, everyone's talking about Zelensky, you know, okay, whatever Trump and Russia, whatever deal they might come up with, you know, will Zelensky agree to it? And if you know Ukraine, you know it's not about one person. It's about the entire country that has withstood, the stories of the people we shared these past 3 years. And I don't see people here quitting. If you're in Lviv in the West, you might hear more people willing to negotiate. But the closer you go to Russia, the closer you go to cities that are under fire, like Nikopol in the south, or especially Kharkiv, 30 miles from Russia, that's the capital of defiance. You know, the Ukrainian city that's closest to Russia, which is still, it's a bustling city. There's still about 700,000 people there. It's an entrepreneurial, hopeful place despite the attacks. Those people don't want to surrender at all. And I think that this gets missed in the conversations is, you know, the reality in the ground. Like, if you think you're going to divide Ukraine, well, it's actually at this moment, it's the Ukrainians who are closest to Russia who desperately do not want to surrender. So that needs to be injected into the conversation. And the first impression I really get from people close to Trump and Musk and others is that, well, when they talk to me, they almost feel guilty. Because they know that there's something noble here in Ukraine. And my question to them is, okay, even if you don't want to support this, like, can you at least not make up stories about Ukraine? Can you at least, you know, acknowledge what Ukrainians are fighting for? You know, when J.D. Vance gave that speech in Munich chastising Europe for being weak, there's a lot of truth to that. But he missed the biggest country in Europe, which is Ukraine, which is actually standing strong. And when I talk one-on-one with people close to those in the White House, all of a sudden they're able to see this. And I think the objections to supporting Ukraine are based on a lack of information. And one of the biggest lacks of information is that I think people think that Russia has been playing this game very well the past weeks, projecting this idea that Ukraine is extremely weak. And it's actually not. It's so much stronger than 2022. And I remember, you know, listeners writing in saying times when they could hear fear in my voice. I mean, There were times when things have been pretty, you felt that everything could fall apart. I don't see that here now. And even the fact that, you know, I'm talking to you right now from Kyiv with electricity, everyone thought we would have no electricity this entire winter. And guess what? There's been not a single problem in 2025. And these are signs of Ukraine's strength, or that the fact that city of Pokrovsk, which there's heavy fighting there every day, all the experts, from the Economist to, you know, ex-Pentagon people, they said that that city was going to fall in September of last year, and it hasn't fallen. And just like Bakhmut in 2022, and I think these, you know, the absence of a problem doesn't become a headline, but because of that. I think Washington and the media as well, but especially the White House, they don't have a command of the positive narratives that show that Ukraine is strong and Ukraine can win. They simply don't know it because they're overwhelmed by information and they don't have a clear view of it, including, I think, someone like General Kellogg. His daughter, by the way, General Kellogg's daughter works in Kyiv. She's got a wonderful nonprofit here to help the military. But if you don't have the information sort of packaged in the right way, you can easily miss the best stories. And the last point of that I'll make is the Black Sea. You know, we talk about Crimea and giving Crimea up to letting Russia have Crimea. Okay, but in that conversation, no one says, okay, you realize that Russia's Navy has been forced out of Crimea, you know, in 2023 by Ukraine. Ukraine has destroyed a third of Russia's Black Sea fleet. They had to leave Crimea. So if you give up Crimea, does that mean that the Navy comes back to Crimea? I mean, you're going to erase all this hard work that was done. And I think these stories are not talked about at all right now.
And you really set us straight on a lot of things and a lot of misinformation, especially about the cost of arms the United States has given Ukraine, you corrected. And all of that added up to informative and, I will say, somehow, in some ways, an entertaining broadcast every day.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to think that for me, as I see it, when I see all the Americans, especially who come to Ukraine, that this to me seems like the world's best self-help book, beyond all the other stuff. But, you know, inspiring people doing incredible things and to be able to share those stories. And, you know, I'm so grateful that we had the daily aspect of it and that, you know, it was limited to 10 minutes, which sort of required us to be sharp, which is important. And I've heard people, they miss that and they want that back. I promise to do my best to share the inside scoop as far as I can on what's really happening here in a way that affects the entire world, including Chicago. As always, I continue reporting. If you follow me at JP Lindsley on X, on Instagram and YouTube, or through our website, UkrainianFreedomNews.com, we'll continue reporting and look forward to what formats we can come up with to keep going here. And as always, I want to get back, Bob, to the when we always said, until tomorrow, Bob.
That's right. And right before we go real quick, you just reminded me of several times I heard in my ear right before we went on the air, we've lost our connection. We've lost our connection. Somehow you always came through for us. Thanks, Joe.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Indeed.
Joseph Lindsley, the full conversation that I had with Joe, including part one that we broadcast yesterday, is at WGNRadio.com on the Surratt show page. We've also posted the link to Joseph's YouTube page where you can see what he looks like. So check it all out at WGNRadio.com. And I do want to point out that over the course of these past 3 years, 17 journalists and media workers have been killed covering this war.